SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From Churchill Downs, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, SteveBick.com. Almost forgot the .com. As we suggested yesterday, I'm not sure who it was that we were talking to, that would there possibly be defections? You obviously have one set of connections that are thrilled and excited and one set that are devastated, and the degrees of deflated to devastated this morning early. And I imagine a lot of you, most of you, have seen by now the various alerts from the trades and on Twitter and Facebook, etc. Joe Mars, wild on ice, with a ankle injury, finishing up his work this morning. And he's been transported to the clinic and being evaluated. And it appears that the last I heard, Travis Stone is joining us, and maybe Travis, and I think KK will join us in a minute. If you've heard more, I think Stable.
The last I heard, they brought him to the medical center here, and then he was on his way to Lexington, yeah. And that's all I've heard.
Yeah. Now, so we'll keep you up to date, and I feel terrible. Obviously, I mean it's a. Also a horse, not that the $6,000 means anything, but you know, a horse that was supplemented after the win at Sunland. And actually, this is the second circumstance along these lines. Joe Marr was here with Blamed, the filly, heading for the Oaks. And I mean, she got nicked up and couldn't run. And she, you know, she went on to a career from that point. Later, I know, in fact, Bill Mott had her at a certain point in her career. But the homebred Frank Sumter and all the nice things that it was one of the nice stories heading into Derby. As a result, it does create a fascinating scenario because a Derby-winning trainer, John Sheriffs, this is not a bad consolation prize for not being elected to the Hall of Fame. He gets Skinner in for Lee Searing and the Searing family, CRK Stable, apparently doing fabulous out of the Santa Anita Derby. And if I'm not mistaken, I think Giacomo was also third.
I believe you're right.
In the Santa Anita Derby, with behind Buzzard's Bay and the Roger Stein horse. And then it was Giacomo and Wilco were the four. They all came here and all, well, not Buzzard's Bay. Buzzard's Bay didn't get here. He got hurt. But the other horses out of that Santa Anita Derby, and Giacomo, of course, wins. Skinner becomes a very viable horse, at the very least, for exotic purposes.
Yeah, if you watch his most recent race, he was a little bit more push button on the far turn for Victor Espinosa. I think you could argue that he maybe moved a little bit too soon with that wide move. And my only concern with him from a gambling perspective is he was unable to win it. and I that sort of middle move, far turn, burst of speed, he might have the looks of more of a one turn closer type. I think that is, I think that's a fair question, but him drawing in makes this race certainly more interesting. Some storylines there. Obviously, Victor's had some success in the Derby, as is the trainer. So I think he ran well enough in the Santa Anita Derby, and he was right there with those other two. You know, Practical Move will be one of the main contenders in here. So yeah, it's just a good addition.
Victor Espinoza, people, they immediately will think American Pharoah, and that's fine. However, California Chrome, mm-hmm. There's that. And then, of course, there was War Emblem.
Yeah.
So, in fact, just thinking about that, in the aughts, the teens, and a chance potentially to win a Derby in a third different decade.
Yeah.
And that is an interesting sidebar. Eddie Arcaro certainly did it, 30s, 40s, and 50s. And I imagined Shu might have done it. Shoemaker had to have done it because he won in the 50s and the 60s, and he became the oldest jock to win a Derby when Ferdinand won in the 80s. Did he win?
That's a good question.
Did he win in the 70s?
I wasn't born yet. I don't know.
Thank you. very, very offensive comment by...
I don't mean to offend.
Jeez. Wow. I'll tell you what. Now I'm going to the record book, and I will come up with this because I have this kind of information at my fingertips, and here we go. Here it is. Multiple jockey successes in the Eddie Arcaro, Lauren in 38, Whirlaway in 41, Hoop Jr. for Fred Hooper, first horse he ever brought to the Derby, Citation in 48 as well. So three in the 40s, and then Hill Gale. There we go, 52. So 30s, 40s, and 50s for Eddie Arcaro for his mark. Then Hardtack in the 50s and 60s. Shoemaker, 50s, 60s, and 80s. He did not win in the 70s.
Yep. Yep.
Did not win in the 70s. Angel, 70s and 80s. Stevens, 80s and 90s. KD, his three, 90s and the aughts.
Victor fits the bill.
Victor and Eddie Arcaro. Johnny V actually is sitting on the doorstep with Animal Kingdom in 2011, Always Dreaming in 17, and Authentic in 20. So I don't know if he's gonna rise. I don't think he's riding into the
2030. Yeah, seems like a long time from now.
So there you go. There's the answer, Victor Espinoza, and that's a great trivia question. What jockeys have won Derbies in three decades, and the answer is Arcaro, Shoemaker, and Victor Espinoza.
That's kind of wild.
Right?
Yeah. Two of those three went for the Triple Crown and didn't get it. That's kind of,
You never know what Esoterica is going to rear its ugly head.
Exactly. Especially 10 days out. Just never know.
Exactly. Thinking about the pace for a second, doesn't really... Skinner is going to be mid-pack at best.
Yeah, it's funny. You mentioned that I put on Twitter yesterday. I mean, I like to do these
I saw your, yeah, your, in fact, and, let's pull yours up.
Yeah, I mean, based upon the responses, we can expect about 25 to 28 horses stalking the pace. Because everybody thinks everybody else is going to the lead. The exercise with that was just to get an idea of what to expect early, because there really is no defined one-way speed. I mean, there's nobody that is on paper, at least, guaranteed to go or to create that early pace. And I put Jace's Road out there because he had been involved in some sprint races as a two-year-old, and I don't think they'd be upset if he helped set the table for a horse like Angel of Empire, which is basically the entire same group. So I sort of penciled him in as one, and just had a bunch of people with random feedback, like if Mage is in front of Forte, he wins this, that, and the other, and it's like, it's what makes the Derby great, right? Everybody has these different opinions, but I feel like I don't think it's too far off what I put up there. I think there's a fairly defined group of horses that want to be forward, and a fairly defined group of horses that aren't fast enough to be forward, and we'll just see how fast those forward horses go. Everybody originally thought that Derma Sotogake was a speedball, but in many of his races, he rated kindly. He can come from off it, too, so he's not guaranteed to go. And I think he went last time because he drew the inside, and nobody else went. So it's sort of, he ended up on the lead by default. King's Barnes, I think a similar scenario there. He doesn't have to go. There's just a lot of doesn't have to goes, and I'll be very surprised if we see some sort of scorching pace next weekend that sets it up for some of those deep, deep closers like last year.
The one surprise I'm going to put your grid out. We discussed this with Tyler Wissman the mm-hmm. other morning, and there's been some really good feedback since. CJ is going to join us, CJ Mulkowski, probably tomorrow. He's been on vacation. Actually, gets back from vacation today. So CJ begged off until tomorrow. So we'll get some of the time form pace outlook. Mm-hmm. They're calling it a fast pace. And David Aragona made the point as well that even without the benefit of one way, Trini Berg and who was the nice one? Another
keyed entry types that just go quick. Yeah.
Yep. And
Crown Pride last year, who was racing like in the Breeders' Cup Sprint for a bit. Well, yeah.
Which was bizarre and damaging to his to his chances. I'm also thinking of Promise, the McPeak that
Promise is Fulfilled.
Promise is Fulfilled, though, is it enters this discussion.
Noble's Promise is the one you're
Noble's
thinking of.
Noble's Promise
in the Super Savory year
with Willie Martinez.
Yeah,
and basically was on up near the lead off the turn.
He pressed. Who led that year? Why can't I think of who it was? It was Sloppy Conveyance.
Baffert probably. That makes sense.
I think it was Conveyance.
Was that Materiality's year too?
The Materiality was American Pharoah's year 15.
Okay, because he was the ill-fated.
I think it was Conveyance. I think
that makes sense. That makes sense.
The thing on the pace in the Derby, though, and it's these are horses that have been pointed to and prepared for, and everything they've done for the past X number of months has been with this in mind, and they are the elite horses of their division, and it's the Derby. So what we consider a fast pace on a day-in and day-out basis does not apply to a race like this. A 46-4 Derby half mile, by Derby standards, would be considered, sharp, strong, but not bruising like a 45 and change. Whereas a 46 and change half mile, on a regular Saturday at Churchill would be considered rather quick. So it's sort of all relative. You have to take the Derby consideration component into it as well.
Well, and I just tweeted out your note from last night, from yesterday actually afternoon, and Jace's Road you've got as sort of the point man.
I think so, but I'm not, I say that's very rough because, if he draws the 20, if he draws the 20, I think he has to go. I think he has to go. I don't think he has any other chance. Like, and he helped set the table for Angel of Empire, in that same group of connections who would like to see a sharp pace on in the Derby. So, but there's several there that, King's Barnes could break on top. Reincarnate, I think, is a horse, given the post draw or intent, could easily try and speed pop the field. Johnny V's done that before. Cyclone Mischief potentially has. And there's just a lot of them that could be there, but none of them, in my opinion, are guaranteed to be there. I went back and watched the start of a few Derbies where we had the very dichotomous scenario of a very fast pace versus a slow pace, and it really depends on jockey intent. If you watch the start of some of those super psychotic paces, there were five or six riders pushing out of the gate, whereas the other one, there was one or two. So in the Medina Spirit year, War Emblem year, there wasn't a lot of shoving coming out of there. So I mean, that's what I'm going to be looking for, just to see how this thing shakes out. I can't believe we see anything close to what we saw last year.
No, and it makes sense that we wouldn't. And it's funny because it became very clear as the prep season was unfolding that there was no, you know, there was no one that was going to fulfill that role.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know how much of that actually can be partly, or at least partly, attributed to the Baffert factor.
That's fair. No, that's a fair observation,
right?
Yeah, that's fair.
And not that what, you know, Tim Yakteen was doing with those horses, it really does turn out that, and I had this discussion on Derby Trail where the point was trying to be made that a critique of Baffert in general by saying, oh, none of the horses that were turned over to Yakteen moved forward. That's fair enough. When you look at figures and you look at the arc of their development, they weren't that great, period.
And his two best horses, one of which was taken off the trail.
Yep.
And Cave Rock, I don't even know if he's still pointed to the Preakness, but he's obviously a very talented horse. Just, you know, didn't really make it onto the trail. So, no, that's fair.
And, you know, Reincarnate is going to show up here. We were all anticipating a step forward in the Arkansas Derby, and it didn't necessarily come. But how surprised would you be if he plays a prominent role?
Oh, I think he's one of those that we've seen this before with Johnny V. He senses a scenario like this, and he'll be fine getting out there and getting some forward position. Evenly matched in a race that doesn't project to be super quick on the front end. I mean, is he hanging around to the quarter pole? I could see it easily.
Yeah, and to go back to, and I'm sure some of you are looking at it right now. Stalker Pressers, you've got Hit Show, King's Barnes, Reincarnate, Two Fills, and Verifying. We had Brad Cox for just a couple of minutes the other morning, and I mean,
if Verifying was on the lead, would you be totally shocked?
No,
right?
I think he might want to just be drafting on somebody.
Yep.
Like a Jace. Well,
in that
Jace's Road would be.
Yeah, in that group, in watching replays, the one that I think is super handy and will do whatever his rider wants is Two Fills. I think Two Fills is just a very tractable horse, and if Jareth senses a slow pace, I think he can get involved. If it's a quick pace, he can back off. I see him being a bit of a wise guy horse as we get to the Derby, and just a good horse that can do whatever they please.
He's been my choice for that, partly for that reason. Here's the problem with landing on a Two Fills. It's too sweet of a story, and Ravelli is such a perfect, you know, character to take on the role of Derby winning trainer, that it's too good. It's just too perfect. I did see just minutes ago Jim Miller from Hawthorne, and there's a lot of fun things happening at Hawthorne.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that the potential for a Derby winner to come out of Hawthorne, that might be, you know, root for the best story. You know, considering, I don't know if you saw what Bill Finley wrote, the early returns mm-hmm. on the experiment, the 12% whips takeout, has been very productive for Hawthorne.
Which is good to see.
It is, and it sends a message to everybody else collectively. And what's interesting about it is that for them to be up the way they are, as opposed to what happened at Canterbury, where it was a little bit more of a novelty when they tried it. It was all when Lou Raffetto tried it years ago at Laurel for a meet. I mean, if you remember this,
mm-hmm.
was it Laurel? I think it was at Laurel, a fall session at Laurel where they tried it. And they said, well, it really, you know, we didn't get the revenue, we didn't get the added handle that justifies or that, you know, makes up the shortfall for the difference in price. For Hawthorne to see the kind of increase they've seen is interesting because it says that the price-conscious player is responding in kind and directly to the effort, as opposed to what happened at Laurel. Now it's over 10 years ago, and Canterbury about 4 years ago, where yes, it put more money back in the hands of players in their bankroll, but they didn't necessarily churn it back at that racetrack. It feels like people are rewarding Hawthorne because of the long-term dialogue at this point about takeout,
which is good because
right.
I think in many ways we are a sharper, more well-informed horse player public, and so the idea of takeout playing a role in your bankroll over the long run, I just think is more out there now. There's more discussion about it. There's more back and forth. So I think the response to Hawthorne is indicative of that. When you try and make a takeout adjustment at one track and one track only, it's tough because you run your race at a 12% takeout, and then you have 25 to your next. Well, guess what's in between? A bunch of other tracks with a 20% takeout, and a lot of horse players don't really have the patience to wait 25 minutes, and they dive in, and the money gets pushed around. I mean, I think the real answer to a cohesive, a universal takeout reduction is perish the thought. Everybody in racing comes to the table together and says, hey, let's try this, you know, and just see.
Agreed. And whether it's a quiet period, maybe. There's been a lot of good ideas floated on this topic. I don't know how we veered off of this because of Hawthorne, because Jim Miller tweeted
Jim's fault.
it's all Hawthorne Jim.
Yeah.
Jim just tweeted the splits. Apparently, all systems go with two fills. Yep. Major work, and he's coming in late. He'll come in over the weekend, but he worked this morning at Hawthorne, and that's how we ended up here.
Previous winner over the track too. Don't discount that.
I love that. I mean, the secrets, the Street Sense win. Here we go. Jim mentioning they got footage for those that want to see the two fills video. They're going to show it during their paddock show at 1:30. So that's 1:30 Central, so 2:30 Eastern. So if those of you, and I hope that they'll, I don't know if they put that on, did they put that, if that's a YouTube viewable. Here's what Two Fills did this morning, 36, 48, 59, out in 112 with Jareth Loveberry aboard. And I'm a 12, 12, 12, 12.
Yeah.
I love that.
My only worry with him is that he ran a big number last time. If that was a dirt race, he'd be one of the favorites for sure. If that was anybody but Ravelli, it's no slight on Ravelli. If Two Fills was a Pletcher, a Cox, or a Baffert, if Baffert were running, he would be easily one of the favorites. I just worry that the synthetic allowed him to run that sharper number, you know, by hard spun. But the dam was fine on dirt, and he's won on dirt. And, you know, sometimes you just have to take improvement with a young three-year-old at face value. And he's going to sit a trip, and I think he's a major player.
Well, I've sort of landed on him. I don't have to write up that Derby preview, 10 days out, 12 days out like we used to. And that, you know, allows me to, you know, to basically watch and take everything into consideration by the time I... But historically, I've tried to get out in front, tried to get out in front of the pick and live with it. And I've been talking to Phil since back in February. Travis Stone is with us. Rich Migliori listening in.
Oh, nice.
And hadn't recognized the dulcet tones.
Oh,
but it's hello, Travis.
Richie. Yeah, it's nice.
When it comes to this, and let's keep going through your grid, and we'll hit on whatever horse out of it that you have some added commentary. The mid-pack group, Cyclone Mischief, who is now on deck. He is sitting in the
live long shot. He's a live long shot.
He
the horse is okay. He's okay, and his last race was a nice improvement, sort of a return to form. If he takes a step forward and gets in, I think he's dangerous.
You've got Derma Sotagaki in the mid-pack, but again, you know, a lot of this will be draw-related.
Could go forward easily.
Lord Miles, who people are going to be very dismissive of for all the different reasons, wood and blah, blah, blah. In the meantime, he's a Curlin, the classic sire, and another furlong. If you were surprised, you know, if you didn't expect him at 9 furlongs, you'll love him at 10.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, I prefer Hitcho out of the wood. I just think Hitcho's been a little bit more consistent and the Brad factor there. But,
Mage, who I've got some video of Mage. In fact, I'll put up both. I was surprised, actually, that he came around a second time.
Yeah.
And it depends on where he started his gallop. This morning, we'll get a chance to talk maybe with Mike Welch in a little bit. A busy morning for Oaks. starters, and a lot going on that front. But Mage, after the works were all over, Mage came out, and I saw him go around twice, and he looked, sometimes they go a little easy early, and then they pick it up. He was going the same, just shy of a two-minute lick all the way around.
He, you mentioned Curlin, it's sort of a similar scenario in that he's had a rapid ascent with a tough ask basically at each and every start. And for a good two furlongs of that Florida Derby, it looked like he was winning the Florida Derby, right? Only for Ted Forte sort of run him down. I think he's extremely talented. I'm not saying anything spectacular there. But it does feel like this is a lot to ask a horse like Mage. And I envision him playing a role because he has run well against some of the best. But getting him home on top, I think will prove difficult.
Practical Move is also in your mid-pack set.
Yeah, I just feel like, he's sort of enjoyed these pocket trips out west. In fact, Tony Kahlo, who calls races at Finger Lakes, responded to my tweet and was like, where they go. that he thinks he'll be closer. And I was like, well, this is what's great about the Derby. And like I said, 30 people thought that 40 different horses are going to be pressing this pace. Practical Move could easily be forward, but I felt like he was just a little bit less sharp than some of these others and will sort of find himself relegated a little bit off the pace. I think Practical Move ends up being an overlay in here almost always, just because I think there's a lot of money gravitating towards some of the more East Coast horses. And we did a thing in downtown last night, and my buddy David Leverage said, if Practical Move was trained by a Baffert in a spot like this, he would certainly be one of the top two favorites.
What does what he does have going for him in terms of public lean, he is the only horse with the pair of triple-digit buyers. And
That's real.
It does draw attention, and it does draw money. It also draws some real stupidity on the internet because the name Andy Byer, there's like this cognitive disconnect. People just go berserk.
There's a lot of stupidity on the internet. It's a tough spot.
As closers, you've got the late runners in two different sets. You've got them as closers and deep closers. And frankly, you've got half the field. You've got 10 of the 20 that are involved as closers: Angel of Empire, Confidence Game, Forte, Rocket Can, and Tap It Trice. And then deep closers: Continuar, Disarm, Race Kane, Skinner, and Sun Thunder.
Yeah, I just think that's the way the race shakes out in the back half of the field, and it is interesting. You mentioned it. So you got Forte, who's the favorite. Tap It Trice, likely the second favorite. Angel of Empire is going to be, maybe fourth favorite or fifth favorite or so, give or take. He's taken some sort of wise guy money, I think, all of which want to come from off the pace. And in a race that we've talked about, it doesn't have a ton of it. So I think that makes for an interesting scenario for them. Talk about Tap It Trice. Everybody took notice of him when he won the race at Gulfstream Park. And then they also took notice of what happened in Tampa, where he looked completely hopeless for about 90% of the race before he finally found a way to win. I thought his Bluegrass was a much improved effort. He still drew the rail. He's not going to speed pop any field, so that is a concern. But he did what Saez needed to do. He got him outside, and all of a sudden, going down the backstretch, he was right there. I thought it was just a much improved effort, a horse going in the right direction. If he draws the inside, is a horse I'd probably jump off of. If he draws outside, I think, and who knows with some of these horses that aren't in the Derby where they end up, down the road. I think Tap It Trice ends up being the best horse in this race. And it's whether or not he gets the trip and sort of the situation that allows him to win here, as opposed to, a race like the Belmont, which everybody has sort of said that's his race.
If we're going to talk stories, Mandy Pope, that story is attractive given the investment she's put in building the Broodmare Band. This is not a homebred of hers. Her partner, Anthony Beck, Gainsway bred Tap It Trice, but kind of feels like Luis Saez is owed a derby somewhere along the line.
And he's going to join us this spring at Churchill, so looking forward to that. And I think Saez is just, I just like his aggression. And he's going to have to be aggressive with this horse. He can't allow him to drop back to 18th or 19th. They're going to have to get more forward early in the race. And for him, it is really all about the draw, in my opinion.
It feels like for him, let's say, 8 to 16.
Yeah.
In that range, so that he could get the Luis Saez drafting trip.
Yep.
Sitting 8th to 12th.
Yeah. Yep. In the clear,
three wide.
Out of trouble. I mean, you know, so my friend Norm Cassie, who obviously trained many Tappets, he says he's always said, he goes, I don't know about a Tappet in the Derby. He says they've all got these mental things going on. They're trying to figure things out. They're sort of these hyperactive, you know, 2 and 3 year olds. And, getting down and inside in a race like the Derby, that would prove difficult. So I'd be fine if I'm Tappet Trice being three wide both turns. I think you sacrifice that ground loss to be in a better position.
4 straight wins. So in terms of figuring things out and taking natural steps forward, he's in the midst of it.
I thought that Bluegrass was a huge step forward for him. I really was impressed with that. And by the way, he ran down, and I said this last night too, so Verifying is a good horse. Remember, he won that race at Saratoga last summer. He's run some good races in the past. He sat an absolutely perfect stalking trip in the Bluegrass on a pace that was not quick. So Verifying, by all accounts, was probably supposed to win the Bluegrass any other year, but this horse, Tappet Trice, came and ran him down. I think that's how good Tappet Trice is. He would be my top pick if I had to make a pick.
Well, and Brad Cox, when he was here Tuesday, people are hearing the voice, and you might have heard the voice inflection. I was sitting here with him. He thought Verifying was winning that race, you could tell he was surprised and in fact shocked that Tappet Trice got him. So tremendous respect. You could tell that Brad Cox understands how serious Tappet Trice is. You know, considering it just occurring to me. Considering how much flack this class is taking collectively as being slow, slowish,
mm-hmm.
The fillies are slow.
Yes.
The boys are slowish.
Yeah.
Forte is coming in on a 5-race win streak. Practical Move is 1-3 straight.
Mm-hmm.
Angel of Empire, the last 2. 4 straight. For Tappet Trice. Kings Barnes is undefeated. People may have forgotten that, but
yeah.
3 for 3. That's a polished, accomplished
yeah.
set of horses right there that are in the midst of win streaks.
I think the whole conversation about being slow versus not slow is interesting too, because I feel like we're trending that way, and I don't know what it could possibly be. It could be a change in the Lasix, and we're starting to see the impact of that long term with, you know, the lack of Lasix and graded stakes, and you know, maybe we're all still hanging on to the years of the 108 horses coming, you know, 108 buyer horses coming into the Derby. That just might be a thing of the past, and these horses are. And the other thing is the points too, right? So way back when there was no points race for the Derby, you were incentivized to run well in races like the Hopeful or the Saratoga Special or what have you.
Yes.
Now you don't have to. You need to sort of take your time and point to some of the later point season races. So I think there's just a few factors at play with that.
I've maintained and in conversation with Sid Fernando this winter and spring regarding the pedigrees of these horses, that there is such a lean now from either the commercial market and from the home breeders. Everybody wants stallions. Everybody wants a classic distance horse. And as a result, I mean, you look through the stallions, not to say that every single one of them is a classic distance type, because, you know, Into Mischief, Practical Joke, Hardspun to an extent, Uncle Mo, did I say Violence, Into Mischief? You know, there's a lot of this kind of repetitiveness of horses that are more or less middle distance
oriented.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
But that still is a notable change and difference from a generation ago, let's say, where you had way more sprint and speed tinged pedigrees on the top end.
Yeah.
Where it, you know, there was the speed over stamina philosophy.
Yeah.
Funny side. He had that, you know, distorted humor was an unknown quantity. That was his first crop. Mm-hmm. And the thought was that he was, you know, kind of a 7/8 to a mile, maybe a mile, and a 16th stallion. And Funny Sides celebrated a birthday the other day. I saw the saw Jack Knowlton feeding him a carrot cake. The dam that Bell's Good Side and that whole feed, the Seattle Slough, and there's like three. I think there was three Triple Crown winners, or Little Current was even in his pedigree. I mean, he had this classic, you know, speed over stamina kind of a pedigree. But you know, here's Justify, Verifying's sire, and Good Magic, son of Curlin. Then there's the Curlins, like Lord Miles. So it's a fun discussion. Let's go back to this list. I suppose we should talk about Forte, considering that he's going to be your favorite.
Yeah, I mean, I think like many others, I was sort of expecting not a coming out party because he's already there, but a bigger win in the Florida Derby. But I go back to, I remember watching them walking around the walking ring. He was so washy. It felt like they were in the ring for a long time. Pletcher ended up saying it was definitely a warm day in Florida. And so I think he had reason to be a little bit flat in that Florida Derby. And then, of course, Mage makes the first move on him, and Irad, as Irad always does, decides to wait a little bit and makes the smart decision to switch him back out. It's hard to run down horses at Gulfstream Park like he did, where you get past and you have to wait and you have to go back outside. And if he handles the 150,000 plus people that'll be here, and provided it's not going to be 95 degrees, which it does not look like it will be, I expect him to maybe take that step back forward, and it's just whether or not he works out a trip and he truly wants to go the 10 furlongs. And you know, some sharp horse player friends of mine have felt like the Florida Derby is indicative of a horse that is not going to love that 10th furlong. I don't really want to agree with that. I think he'll be fine. Does anybody really want to get 10 furlongs anyway at this time? But I think he's the horse to beat and the deserving favorite, and I won't be surprised if he wins. And I'd like to see Irad get his first Derby. It'd be cool.
The other horses in this group, Confidence Game, trying to do something highly unusual. I mean, we thought that Pletcher getting Danza here off the Tampa Bay Derby was a, you know, an extensive break.
Yeah, there's a lot going on there.
This is tough.
Not for me. If I'm a gambler, I can't play a horse like that. I want to see more starts.
February 25th, the Rebel date, and not that that work wasn't good. The mile and an eighth, essentially a race put into him.
And, you know, the other thing is, during your three-year-old season, there's a lot of big money out there in purses. There's no purse on a workout. And so there's a reason why they worked him out and didn't run him. And I'm not implying that this horse is unsound or anything like that, none whatsoever. I mean, we are horse players right now, though, and I just don't like that layoff. And I feel like I would have loved to have seen him in the Lexington to get a gauge of his fitness and where he is, and to use that as a move forward for him. But for now, there's just far more interesting horses to bet, in my opinion.
He does. It's not like he doesn't have foundation. I mean, he's made 7 starts.
You know, and he's got. You know, I watched his replay, and I made a note in my notes. Is like, this horse has a little bit more speed than it might look like on paper at first. He's not going to be this a total one and out closer. I just think the way this race shakes out, he is going to be relegated to the near the back of the pack. So he can be handy if needed, and you know, maybe if it were to rain, it would move him up a little bit, but. Yes, he's just still not for me.
He has won 2 races on the lead, and then of course in the Rebel he was from mid pack and moved steadily and earned laurels, as they say. The other part of that closer contingent, we talked Angel. Did we talk Angel?
You know, not really. To me, I think he's a bit of a buzz horse. People are talking about him.
Yeah.
That move in the Arkansas Derby was a Derby-winning move, where it's this long, sustained, wide run. I have questions about the quality of that race and whether or not it's going to stack up against this group. You know, Rocket Can was in there, Reincarnate, who really hasn't moved forward. King Russell's a nice little, like, underneath closer type for other types of races, would be a huge long shot in here. So I'm a little bit skeptical that he beat much in there, and that it's not like the number came back super fast. But that was a Derby-winning move, and I think he's the most reliable off-the-pace horse to run at least third or fourth if you're playing those types of gimmicks.
Flavian Pratt, who, as I said to, Brad Cox, you know, you'd like to have a Derby entrant hit the wire first, as opposed to being moved up. And Flavian Pratt, of course, on Country House,
He'll get his a proper Derby someday.
There you go.
Yeah.
Rocket Can, you sort of covered just by virtue of...
Adding the blinkers is interesting. I don't think he's the most impossible underneath long shot. He feels like he's probably too slow.
Who's the other horse? Somebody else is adding blinkers.
Sun Thunder.
Sun Thunder. Let's get to the deep closers. Travis Stone with us as we walk through his pace quadrants, not quad, because there's five of them. is there an equivalent word for
quadrants or I don't know,
hexavalence?
Hectons, I don't
know. Right? I don't, there probably, there has to be.
Yeah.
Continue our disarm, Raise Cane, Skinner, Sun Thunder.
Of that group, I think I like Disarm as the one horse to maybe pick up some pieces. When I play supers and tries, I like to find these types to run third or fourth. He's had two very slow paces in a row. The Lexington, I'm not going to hold that against him. It was another slow pace, and they just needed to get some points. And I trust no one else in this game better than Steve Asmussen to run horses and get them to run into peak condition for horse races. I mean, look what he did with Epicenter. Epicenter had a fairly steady campaign and you know, is winning the Travers by open lengths. He's just a phenomenal dirt conditioner. And it was sort of said that when they ran second, losing in a Derby, he was pretty ecstatic down there in New Orleans, sort of implying that he likes this horse quite a bit. He's going to have to get faster, he's going to have to improve, but he's going to be big odds, and I think, you know, running on for third or fourth is not impossible.
I will make the point, a couple of things became apparent with that workout the other morning. It was not an Asmussen-like pre-Derby work.
That's 100%.
And it also tells us that they were strictly running in that Lexington to garner the points and to not ring him out.
Yep, I agree.
Because they weren't interested in winning the Lexington. It was made very clear. And the fact that Joel Rosario, I mean, Ron Anderson is as savvy and as clever as there's maybe ever been in that realm of the jock agent world.
Yep.
And this is where he maneuvered to end up on this horse. And that worked the other morning. Everybody was looking at each other like that was more than we ever see from
Steve. Is known for like those sort of methodical
102.
Yeah, just get him around there, and you're not looking for anything flashy.
Flat.
It almost felt like it was a different trainer for a bit. It was so out of character.
There's no two ways about it. And it also, you know, because it's the same question I asked Brad Cox, which is, you know, for the trainers that have sent a lot of runners forward in this race to mixed results without a win, you know, what have you learned along the way? What are you doing differently? Has it occurred to you to tweak? And, you know, yes, every horse is an individual, but this race is an individual. And so, you know, doing more than just getting here is, and everybody can, they can shit on Baffert all they want. He is drilling those horses to not just to get to this race. The reason he's won as many as he has is because they're trained to be ready to go 1 mile and a quarter.
Yep.
And way many more have come here, you know, gingerly to just get here. And that, you know, I've brought this up. I've brought this up with Doug O'Neill, with Sadler, with Pletcher, before he started to win them. It's absolutely a fair question to bring up to any, you know, to any trainer, that you can't, to win this race, you need the horse that is absolutely the fittest. And I've told this story 100 times. I haven't brought it up yet. Driving out of Louisville years ago, they were doing some recapping on one of the local radio stations. And a guy just said, you know, my grandma or grandpa told me years ago, when it came to the Triple Crown, the fittest horse wins the Derby, the fastest horse wins the Preakness, the best horse wins the Belmont.
Oh, that's interesting.
And it's as homespun and you know,
yeah,
ridiculous as that kind of a you know, snap judgment summary is, there's a lot to it.
Yeah, that's I actually like that a little bit.
Right?
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
Fair. Yeah.
So you better be fit. The other, let's get the rest of these in, and then I'm going to ask you a couple different questions about
sure.
the rest of the day and the weekend. We talked to Sarm, Raise Kane, Skinner. We obviously talked at the beginning.
Yep.
He's a reverse tri-key horse.
Yeah, he would be. He would be. You know, does he want to go 10? We'll see. But I think it'd be good odds.
Sun Thunder, Raise Kane.
Raise Kane is a miler. He would be pretty impossible, in my opinion. Sun Thunder's interesting. If there was more pace, I might try and convince myself to use him in a fourth or fifth slot for those bold enough to play a wager like the High Five in the Derby. Adding blinkers, I thought maybe that sharpens him a little bit, but you can't pick them all.
You talked about this arm, and I guess that sort of continuar. I've never seen a workout so widely analyzed with utter extremes on
you know,
the compass.
I panned pretty hard. I get it. He got dusted. He got dusted. You can't really sugarcoat what happened. I mean, he was not even in the same zip code as his rival, and it's hard to envision him having much of a say.
I heard one interpretation. Well, it's typical for the Jap. I've heard this about every portion of the work. Oh, it's typical for the Japanese to do what? I heard. Oh, the middle portion when the middle portion they were barely galloping around the turn.
Yeah.
In fact, I even commented as I was just sort of watching. I said they're really just sort of, you know, cantering here. Okay, I said, all right, now they're sort of dropping down. But
if that's their opinion, they should bet them because they'll get a great price.
I guess. Well, and then you know, Rich Ang, who we'll talk to later today. Rich had an interesting point. He was watching the assistant trainer talk about Dermis Odagaki, and you know, I said to him for comedic effect when I asked him a couple of months ago. I said, Rich, you're Asian, right? And Rich said that, you know, the Asian culture is very humble and very, you know, not, you know, boisterous or you know, braggadocious. And Rich said he watched that video with Kate Hunter and the interpreter, and said the assistant trainer said, "Oh, we're going to win the Derby." He said for an Asian, to be that outgoing about it, they're going in confident.
That's the you're the second person to mention that. Pat Cummings and his wife said the same thing. He said to us on text the other day that she goes, obviously she can speak the language very well, and she interpreted it. She goes, interpretation is right on, and he's bold, very confident, and so yeah.
Is Pat? This is an important tea read. Is Pat leaning in that direction?
I'm sure he is now. Yeah, Pat's always going to root for the international flair.
Right. Yeah. Pat can't help himself.
Exactly. Yes. That's his shtick.
For many years, it was Sheikh Pat. Now it's Patasan.
Yeah, I've always called him the ambassador. I call him the ambassador.
The ambassador.
He is the ambassador.
There you go. The diplomat. Well, there you go. There's the walkthrough of Travis Stone's pace grid. And I mean, obviously, how influential and helpful of a guide is it for you in preparing to call the race?
Well, that is definitely more for the race call, to have an idea of who to watch coming out of the gate, who to expect early on. And then if somebody breaks away from that expectation, it's probably a meaningful situation that needs to be addressed as a race caller. And then it is also critical for, and this is something I'll credit Tom Durkin, of course, who was kind enough to spend a few hours with me on the phone my first year here on how to call the Derby. And he says that half-mile time is so critical. He goes, you have to get an idea of how fast that race is going and what you can expect the rest of the way, because that's going to dictate how far back in the field you look on the far turn. Because he says there's 20 horses. You can't call them all in that last half-mile. You have to make a decision at some point how far back you want to go. And he goes, and if you've got a 45 in something, you need to go back quite a ways.
There you go. And that's how you be, so you're prepared to pick up a closer.
Yeah, exactly. If they post a 47-2, well, you know, nobody's coming from 20th probably, right? Most likely. Never say never, but yeah. So, yeah.
We won't press Travis for a Derby selection.
I'd pick Tappet Trice, though.
If he drew outside,
I really like his progression. I think he's going to get bet a little bit. I think he's sort of maybe dipped down to the 4-1 range. Clear second choice. As long as he draws outside. If he drew inside, I would I'd go ahead and bail.
Let me. I might as well start keeping tabs of selections. It's early. It's late enough. I suppose. Tappet Trice. Actually, we'll keep it simple. Tappet Trice, and who's your?
This would be my sort of clever idea. Yeah. It's not super clever. I'd pick Verifying Second.
Interesting. Okay.
I think he's going to sit a good trip. I think he's in form, and I think he's a better horse than people give him credit for.
There we go.
And then who would I pick third?
Look at you with the bluegrass exacta.
I'm a Kentucky boy now. Forte third. I think I'd put Forte third and Practical Move fourth. No, I mean, no real super clever ideas. I think Derby is ho-hum, but I think in terms of prices and long shots, I think this might be a little bit more ho-hum than others.
All right. And that's always a good policy when everybody's saying it's a wide open Derby. Look at the top six favorites, and you'll probably get a trifecta out of that.
Yeah,
maybe one interloper that puts the spurs to the prices. Talk about the Oaks for a little bit, and there are 14 of them, and. You know, people carry on about the dirt. Oh, the big field. It's got to be just as taxing to go through that group of 14.
There is literally not a single horse in the Oaks that if she won, that I would be surprised. I think you can throw a blanket over that field. My pick there would be pretty mischievous. I thought she was narrowly the best of the division earlier in the season. I'm not going to hold that most recent loss against her. That was not the target. The target's coming up. She would sort of be my lean. I have to be unbiased in my race calling, but obviously Norm Cassie's a friend of mine. Would love to see him get an Oaks with South Lawn. She's okay. She's a major player. I think Wet Paint is good. I'm concerned about her running style and a field of 14 fillies. I think that gets a little bit dicey, because I also think the pace in there is slightly questionable. Botanical, though, is also one who might get a little bit dismissed because of her lack of dirt form, but she's got tactical speed, and I think she's okay as well.
I haven't spent, obviously you don't spend the time looking at this field that you do, at least until next week. But I will say this. You do have a few horses that are going to end up being kind of overlooked and shuffled down that are very viable. You know, the horse who's dirtied up more than anybody, and I got to go back and watch her video because I only caught her finishing, was Wonder Wheel. People should be reminded that she's 2-for-2 here, having won the first two starts of her career on this racetrack. You might take note that Brendan Walsh with Pretty Mischievous, I thought she looked good this morning.
Yeah, I like that filly.
Right?
Yeah, she'd be my pick.
Two wins and three starts here with a third. And McPeak, the Ashland winner, also a maiden breaker on this racetrack, going a mile and a 16th, too.
Yeah. Wonder Wheel is a tough read for me. A lot of people were dismissive of her in the Suncoast in her return race this year. I'm not sure what they were expecting from her. She ran fine, but the Ashland was definitely sort of a clunker, and it's tough to determine or tough to get an idea of what to expect of her coming out of there. It would be sort of fitting for the dismissed champion to bounce back and win the crowning event for that division, at least in the spring. I would enjoy the irony there.
Well, there's also a horse that is right now is the Skinner of potentially of the Oaks, and that's Taxed.
I like Taxed. I hope she gets in.
Oh, my God.
I don't want to see somebody
get
defected, but I hope she gets in because I think she's okay. I thought that last race was sneaky good. She's getting better. She's right there. Yeah, she'd be a great ad.
Yesterday, Randy Morse's filly worked and was super impressive.
Yep.
And she's a strapping lass, as they say.
Yeah.
And she finished strong. I was impressed. Rafi Bejarano, whose career has kind of rebounded. It seems like Rafi's back healthy and doing nicely. You know who? It's funny. For all the carrying on about Dermis Onigaki.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't heard three words about Mimi Kakushi.
It's an interesting take. You're right. I don't love the February layoff for her. And some of these others feel like they're going to be a little bit more sort of in form. But no, I'm with you there. It's been sort of quiet.
She's out. You know, she's out there with the. They're out there with the blanket too. The blanket.
It hadn't been that cold.
Well, it was a couple of cold mornings. Let's not.
I don't get up in the morning unless I have to. I was up here today, though, obviously.
Mimi Kakushi. And you know what's interesting about Mimi Kakushi? She's a absolute, you know, U.S. There's no JPN next to her name. She's a City of Light out of a Vicar mare that Woodford bred and was bought as a Timonium 2-year-old in training for a quarter of a million.
And a good number. You know, the other theme of this Oaks is there's a lot of trainers that don't have 120 horses from which to pick Oaks horses, and I like to see that. Some of these guys with smaller operations have legitimate chance to take down one of the big races of the year. And, you know, like Ray Handel, for example, and Norm Cassie, who's got a smaller operation at this point. You know, Michael Yates doesn't have 1,000 starters this year. You know, I Todd Fincher, and you know, another one with a look at it. And Randy Morris, as we've talked about, Taxed, if he could draw in one of the cool little storylines with this year's Oaks.
Very much. And yet, you know, you also have got, of course, all these horses, you know, that Brad Cox is sending forward. The other story that, I mean, now with Wonder Wheel in, it's a little bit less topic, but just days ago you were looking at an Oaks field without Wonder Wheel, Julia Shining, Hoosier Philly, or Punch Bowl. Arguably, I mean, that would be a fun proposition bet.
Yeah.
Let's say Punch Bowl. I mean, what odds would you get that by the end of the year, Punch Bowl or Julia Shining, Hoosier Philly, or Wonder Wheel is the 3-year-old filly champion?
No, that's fair. I mean, she'd be in the conversation. This is no slight on any of these guys. I have very little sympathy if you're on the outside looking in points-wise.
You had plenty
of opportunities to run, and if you couldn't get them, maybe your horse just wasn't ready, and that happens every year. No shame in that. But if you had an opportunity to run and you decided to skip a race and you missed out, that's, you know. We put these races out there for a reason, for horses to run in them, not to watch them, you know.
Well, and on that topic, a couple of things. I want to ask you about the betting menu was officially released yesterday. And I'm going to ask you about how, you know, obviously you're busy both days, but, you know, there'll be some wagers placed. So we'll talk about that in a second. Rich Migliori has come back with a question. What I can't tell, Rich, if you're asking if this is a generic Derby pace question or for this particular Derby. Rich is asking, what would we consider a fast pace for the Derby? Let's take it both ways. You know, what's in general a fast pace for the Derby, and what would be fast for this group?
The tipping point, in my opinion, in the Derby, and I think about this from a race calling perspective, is mid-46. Anything in the lower 46s, the horses involved in the pace, and obviously faster, have to be extremely good. You're talking about horses like Justify, who have to be involved in those sharp paces and stick around to the end. Anything above the mid-46s and the mid-47s becomes a pace where is more on the moderate side of the Derby. So I think in this particular group, it would be right around there.
So there you go. Rich Migliori is joining us as we ask the question live on the air. And Rich, considering you rode in derbies, and Tony Black will join us in a minute too, this whole pace question, I mean, talk about those gates opening and how everybody judges each other when they leave the gate.
Well, I think everybody leaves the gate hard in the Derby because of the size of the field, and I think that plays a huge factor into it. And listen, jockeys are human. They handicap races too, and sometimes you look at a race and say, well, there's not a lot of speed, and then it encourages, five, six, eight guys to say, well, I'm going to be forward. I'm going to get my spot, and it winds up being faster. I missed what Travis said because you called in.
Yeah.
What was the tipping point, Travis?
I think it's, aside from the contentiousness and, number of horses involved in it, I think it's mid-46. You can have a horse in the lower 46 as mid-46 go on with it if he's exceptional. No horses like Justify.
Right.
But I think it's right around that number where there's a tipping point. And it's of course, is field dependent. But I think this year, I'd be very surprised if we get a 46-1 or 46-2. Maybe I shouldn't be surprised because it is the Derby and it's a lot of money and prestige and stuff, so they all want to go a little bit. But, I think that's around the number. This group doesn't really have a lot of sprinter-like speed.
Sure. Understood. I remember when I rode Bob Blackjack, who ultimately was a sprinter. Actually, he did win on turf too, but went 47-3, I think. And I thought, man, I'm in good shape. And when he started to stop, I got slapped from pillar to post. That's one thing as a rider, when you're out of horse in the Derby, you get bounced. I mean, they don't, it's like you're not even existent. They just knock you out of the way.
Yeah. You only get one chance to win it, right? You got to go on with it. Take no prisoners.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, guys, I got to jump off. I'm on my way to Aqueduct for America's Day at the Races. Love listening. Thank you for answering that question.
Rich Migliori, everybody, calling in. Who says we don't take callers anymore? we've actually reached out to Rich. All right, let's take a quick look before what's your day like? What are you doing today?
I'm getting ready for the draw on Monday now for the next couple of days, also getting ready for opening night on Saturday. So, yeah.
I haven't mentioned, in fact, I'm glad you said that, because I do have the card. There it is right there. They drew the card, and it's going to be a late night for everybody.
Only 10, though. Usually we run 11, I think, on this opening night, so we've backed off to 10, which I'm very thankful for.
10-11 is the Roxalana, the feature, which is a six-horse field. Frank's Roquette certainly will be a heavy favorite in the Roxalana. There's a couple of interesting maiden races, a second level allowance. It'll be good to see that turf course get its first
knock on wood, by all accounts, doing
right?
Okay. Hopefully
looks good.
Holds up, yeah.
Let me turn to my, I forgot to print it like an idiot, but let me get to it on my laptop. Here we go. The pools. Some thoughts from you, and I don't think it's a revelation that you help coordinate a group that attacks the pools, not just on the big race days, but Monday through Sunday, pick fives and so forth.
Yeah, I don't bet Derby and Oaks because I don't want to be biased or influenced in the calls. I will probably Venmo one Mr. Nick Tamaro maybe $100 or $200 just to have a rooting interest in some of the concoctions that he comes up with. It's just two of the greatest betting days of the year, and you just have to find a one clever opinion and connect the other dots with it, and you can make a big score. And new this year is the Rolling High Fives at Churchill, so you know, with those big fields and competitive races on the opening, you know, that weekend, not sure it's not opening night, but the Oaks and Derby, those pools will probably handle meaningful numbers, but still have some uncovered combos. And so don't be surprised if we roll into the Pat Day Mile with a meaningful high five carryover that just pops up. So looking forward to that as well. I like those superfectas and high fives.
There's, of course, the two-day wagers that are super popular, including the Oaks Derby Double.
And it's one of those things, you know, everybody spends so much time getting ready for these races, and then the days come around and you get lost handicapping the undercard races. You almost have to commit to the fact that you know who's going to be in the Oaks and Derby. Bet that Oaks Derby Double. Bet that Oaks Woodford Derby Pick 3. Get those out of the way, because if things don't go well Friday into Saturday, you might always have those to get you out for the weekend when the big race comes around, rather than being, you know, sort of buried with no bankroll left.
Well, and in budgeting, we'll say it all next week. Fund the accounts early. Get out ahead of it. Don't be waiting until Friday afternoon, or even worse, Saturday, when bank might close at noon and mm-hmm. you're completely helpless. So get funded if you use Green Dot, however you fund your account, etc. But apportioning the bankroll and keeping the Johnny D powder dry, absolutely vital. You do not. I mean, there's no worse feeling than, you know, the end of Derby Day and Saturday night, and you pick the winner, and you feel like I could have absolutely, retired off of this, and I wasn't ready, or I wasted.
Because you played the 10:30 opener, you know, right?
That is always an experience that. When I think about those Saturday mornings, you know, and taking the you go park over at the stadium, at the football stadium, and take the shuttle over, and you're already watching a race at 10:30.
And you should see it in the booth. Like, you know, you go to the booth every day. The sun's in a certain spot. All of a sudden in the morning, it's like, man, what is going on? You just feel
disoriented.
Disoriented. It's a good
word
for it.
Unbelievable. Yeah. There's a couple of bets that are not necessarily new, but should be reminded. There's going to be that all-stake, all-dirt pick 5 mm-hmm. on Derby Day with the grade ones that'll be attractive. There's the three-year-old pick 3, which is fun because it's going to be the American Turf, the Pat Day Mile, and the Derby. So yep. You get one turf race. The American Turf is shaping up as terrific.
Oh, my gosh. That's a horse race.
Right?
Yeah.
And then there's going to be 14, of course, in the Pat Day Mile because, anybody that, like a Cyclone Mission, if he shouldn't get in to
he'll
Derby,
be in
yep. he'll be in there.
Yep.
So you got those. You've got the Oaks, Woodford, Derby pick 3,
yep,
which has proven popular. I'm sure we'll hear from Satish, and we'll mm-hmm. get Satish's. That's what he always gives us, those three races and his Derby pick. The two-day $1 pick 6 as well. And Gary Palmisano will join us probably Monday or Tuesday. Probably Monday, because he'll be hanging around getting ready for the draw.
We call him the Prince when he comes on.
He is the Prince. He is the absolutely. I'll be on with him Monday night. A reminder again.
Second stride at Molly Malone's, right?
Yeah.
That's a fun event.
It is.
It's a fun event.
It's become an institution. So we're looking forward to that. We'll go through all of this in detail. But that two-day $1 pick 6, which typically is two races on Friday and four on Saturday.
Yeah. That dollar pick 6 level, I think, is the right mix of score potential and manageable. So I definitely take a look at that.
The Derby City, the 20-cent product. I try to remember if that... That does not necessarily get forced out on Derby Day.
I don't believe
no,
because we've had the carry over the front, but I don't want to speak out of turn.
Jackpot! I'll get that from Gary.
The Prince would know.
There we go.
That's why we call him the Prince.
I love it. I love it. The Super High Five is a good. I'm glad you mentioned that. Is that meat long? Is that going?
Yeah, we're rolling those high fives all meat long, right, gents? Yeah. KK and Darren walking by.
There they go.
Yeah.
Any update, by the way?
I think they walked out on you.
They did. They did. All right. I'll get the update during the break. All right.
Good chat.
Fabulous. This was spectacular.
Yeah. We'll see you all week. We'll be here.
I never get this much time with you. This is a rarity, and I'm greatly appreciative.
I enjoyed it as well, and good luck.
Travis Stone, everybody, the voice of Churchill Downs. And here, I will take a picture without the head. Take the headset off.
Okay. This,
because, you know, nobody, not that hair is a concern with you, as we stand up, because the sitting down is never, what's a good, here, let's get a better, this room is just, yeah, it is, everything, it just doesn't have the, you know what we're going to do? I'm going to take the break anyway. I'm going to put you with the press conference backdrop, right? That's a home run. All right. Maybe Marty McGee wants to say hello. He says no. Tomorrow? You're unbelievable. I'll tell you, you might as well, you're retired now officially. I'm not even... he's unbelievable. We'll take a break. Got Tony Black. I got Joe Clancy. We've got Jeff Franklin to do the Winning with Thurgraph segment. Rich Eng later as well. So stay with us. Back to Churchill after this.
It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health.